it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Rise and shine, Atlanta. This is the Morning Shift. I am Bo Morgan. They call me Squidbill. He's the All-American National Champion, former Atlanta Falcon. Michael, don't ask him what the P stands for. Johnson, the Queen of Improv, the First Lady of Atlanta Baseball, coming off a rare win, Miss Allie Mack. And I don't even know what to say about him anymore. I love him like a little brother, but he is a traitor, Mr. Dylan Matthews.
It is one of those things with Dylan. I was thinking about this morning. It's like I don't even know if I feel comfortable messing with him anymore because it's starting to come to fruition.
Right.
You know what
well,
I mean?
You just know that what you thought was a joke is actually the truth.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel.
It hurts.
It like starts to hit too close to home, and you're like, dude, I don't know if I even want to joke about this anymore.
He said hey to me today.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything back. And not because
that.
I was trying to be rude.
That's not a just this morning
No, it was. I wanted to, and I was like, no, I don't know how I feel about you anymore.
Is it possible we have pushed Dylan into this Eagles fandom?
No. I think Dylan was in – I think – what's that word when you Dylan was groomed to be an Eagles fan by Simone. That's what it was. And I give Simone all the credit in the world because – That's not hard to do to change someone's fandom, but she did it.
You three done creating false narratives this morning, or are we going to continue? I mean, what are we doing?
I don't know. Do you or do you not have audio of you chanting
I've
big champs?
I was being supportive. I was just hyping them
pocket,
up.
Bro.
I was just hyping them up. I am a ride or die Falcons fan. I'm an ATLian. I bleed red and black.
Except for on Philly game days.
There is a direct correlation with exposure to how much you like something. Like when you hear a song for the first time, it's not going to be your favorite.
Sure.
You hear it 50 times, you're going to sing along.
I don't know.
Well, I can guarantee you he knows the Fight Eagles fight 100%.
Unfortunately, I do.
Yeah, it's, 100%.
Unfortunately, I do. It's been crammed in there.
Especially Fly Eagles Fly, I believe.
Balls.
I don't know, Allie. I've been to this Superdome probably about almost 20 times now, and I hate it just as bad now as the day I walked in there. So, and along with their fans.
Well, there's always an exception to the rule.
I do like their song though. I will say that. I like the way they sing down in New Orleans. That's
and I mean,
cool.
I don't. It's different. I mean, I'm obviously gonna hate the Saints as much as I've always have. But with the Eagles, I mean, the people they treat me nice because I'm with Simone. So again, I'm not an Eagles fan, but I do respect them and I don't dislike the Eagles because again, the people at tailgates they give me free food and they talk to me nice.
Respectfully, so we're gonna move away from the Eagles.
Please, let's do.
At this point, 7:40 today. Bo is in charge of Top 5 Tuesday. Would you like to reveal your category?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and reveal it because it's not really a big deal to me. Like other ones, I want to be guarded because I want to catch people and really get them in their thoughts. But this one I want people to think of because I do want interaction. This is in honor of this Sunday being our first road game. I am going to do, for me, the top five road game environments in the NFL.
Okay.
I do have a few honorable mentions, but I have been lucky enough to be in every stadium that is currently in the NFL rotation. Some that are no longer in the rotation, but I'm only doing the current ones. And I'm kind of looking forward to it. I've sent Dylan some things that go along with these stadiums. So some of their traditions that I know of, if they have one. So yeah,
I am curious. What the experience you have?
I do have a tie though in one place. So there's it's technically a top six list, but I couldn't.
Wow.
I honestly couldn't. That's how close it was. So.
Okay.
Interesting.
Okay. 8 a.m. If you didn't get on the show yesterday to air out your Falcons opinions, we've got you during the wake-up call today. That'll be your chance. And at 8:40, On3 senior college football reporter Chris Lowe will be joining us. I'm not sure the heartbreak of Sunday's game has completely worn off. I mean, it's going to last for a moment. But we've had more time to decompress, maybe think through a few things. And we did hear from Raheem Morris yesterday. He said he is going to bring in some competition for Young Weku after missing that 44-yard field goal kick on Sunday. Not necessarily that he lost his job, but he's bringing in competition. This is not a surprise, right?
No. As a matter of fact, Drew yesterday on the Steakhouse was talking about there is like a – it's almost – and this sounds derogatory, but it's kind of how you put it, like a traveling circus. There's just a horde of kickers that go to all these tryouts every Tuesday that are trying to break back in the league. And, you know, I think that a lot of them are scheduled, you know, as far as going around to these teams and this team and that team. And we saw Matt Prater last week. I think you're just kind of kicking the tires on most of these guys. But it just so happens that we are in desperate need of somebody that can make a kick at the end of a game right now.
Yeah, I'm not going to say – yeah, I would tell you this was already planned. And being blunt, real, honest, whatever term you want to use, this was already planned. However, I do believe that they probably added a few names that were coming in, and I believe that it changed their mindset. And Mike, you can touch on this too. They have workouts probably every week with different positions, but one of the deals that they that also with this, you know, with every position is you want to know what guys look like in case of emergency, right? In case of an injury or in case of your kicker essentially missing two kicks, because I count the one that bounced off the upright. If you have to hit an upright to bounce it in, and then you miss a game tying field goal, in reality, you missed two kicks, right? I mean, I know that it went in.
I'm with you.
But
I'm with you on that.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
And those were the signals to you that maybe a change needs to be made. So I do want to hear from Raheem Morris. He was also kind of talking about the timing of all this and how you know.
So I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm the most critical kicker and what happened, what went wrong. All you know about is does it go in or does it not, for the most part. But you do have professionals and you do have experts in-house. Can go out there and look at some of the things you're looking for, whether it's the pop, the distance, the length, the consistency, whatever those things are, to try to figure out so we can help us make some of those decisions. But those will always be factors into everything that you're talking about. And, like, some of it comes with experience. Some of it comes being in that moment. So, like, some of those things always happen, man. It's like the golfer, you know. Some of those guys got experience and they know when to swing it. They know what to swing. And know a club to pull out, and you gotta fall back on some of those things.
Well, I can tell you the pop, the distance, the length, those are all three very big things and a lot of different things that you'll do. But one thing I do know was that hasn't really been talked about is a few years ago, Koo kind of changed his stance, and I haven't gone back and kind of completely went through the all 22 like from years ago, which maybe I will. But he has changed things, and this guy at one point in time was the most accurate kicker in the history of the NFL. He was fighting, you know, a guy who has now been released in Justin Tucker for that mantle, and then whatever he did to change his stance really sent you into a spiral.
Yeah, and here's the thing, and I know that later on in the show we'll get the, you know, some film review stuff, and I watch the offensive line, and that's the one thing I do know when I'm looking at it, like what exactly is going wrong and what's bad and what's good. When Youngway lines up to kick, and I thought it was interesting talking to Drew Butler about it yesterday, I'm like, I just don't know. And I know that Youngway tried to explain it in a couple of different ways, and he's talking about the turf and talking about the follow-through and talking about making, you know, tinkering. I don't know. But all I know is you got one job, and that's – I hate saying that. You guys don't ever hear me say that about kickers, but, man, I'm at my wit's end with Young Weku. Like, I really am. Drew talked about it yesterday. That's a cutthroat position in a cutthroat league, and you're getting paid $5 million to make kicks like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while I try my best to be understanding of a lot of the situation these players are in because they're tough, that's a player in a position that is going to end up costing everybody else their job. You know what I mean? And that's just the nature of the beast when it comes to the kickers in this league. So it's just going back and watching it and kind of letting it kind of sit in just a little bit longer, man. It just makes me sick. Really does.
Let me rephrase that. I listened to the press conference. I didn't listen to the whole thing, but I listened to probably over half of it. And most of the, and just in, you know, all transparency, and I listened to all of the Koo stuff. And if you listen to kind of the way Raheem, and I thought our very own Mark Zeno was up there, and of course Mark, you know, what do you consider good? And of course, Raheem was like, I don't know. Look, man, if it goes through the uprights, it's probably the easiest thing. I'm kind of with you on that. And he heard it in that cut. But he kept talking about it to the point where he essentially said, yeah, I mean, we will make a change if we see something that that our experts say is better. But I'll tell you this, you know, the kicking game and Younghoe Koo in particular is kind of being put on blast right now. One of my favorite guys in that building overall, player, coach, is Marquise Williams. I'm a huge fan. It's time to get yourself together because the special teams as a whole was abysmal. The punt return that Cameron Johnson gets, you gave up. Everybody wants to kill this defense. Yeah, you gave up three passing touchdowns. Essentially, they were all on shorter fields. Turnover on downs at the 50, the punt return that put the ball back around the 40 somewhere, and then the bad kickoff after the touchdown by Koo, or not bad kickoff, but the bad kick return coverage. I think Sean Tucker returned it all the way like the 40-something. And then they go down. None of that is acceptable. Then two of those were on special teams. So the special teams as a whole was not very good.
Well, one thing I'm interested to hear you guys talk about today is the film review that you're doing. Bo, you're in your office, but I have the privilege of sitting next to Mike out in the bullpen every morning.
That is not good.
And I mean, the emotional turmoil that was happening to your face as you're watching the film. I'm just interested to hear you guys break this down. Coming up next.
A lot of references to our Lord and Savior while I was sitting there.
There were. Coming up, the Falcons' next opponent, they just had an incredible rally to win last night's game. We'll dig into it next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are the morning shift. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan, and we've got some potentially good news for Drake London and Darnell Mooney. We'll get Raheem's take on their status in a moment. Well, let's talk about last night's game. Bears, Vikings. I'm not sure the Bears will forget seeing Justin Jefferson doing the gritty for quite some time.
How could any of us?
Seriously,
forget?
Vikings had an incredible comeback to win over the Bears 27-24. It was really not looking like JJ McCarthy's debut was panning out all that well until the fourth quarter. He threw for two touchdowns and ran for another. He completed 13 of 20 passes for 143 yards.
Honestly, it was pretty incredible to watch. Yeah. Having watched that first half, and I thought that the Bears were absolutely rolling and had some explosive runs, and Caleb Williams looked like he was settling in, and I was, you know, the Ben Johnson thing, Detroit struggled so bad, you know, yesterday or 2 days ago that I was like, man, maybe this guy really is an offensive guru, you know what I mean, and the way he's been able to put this together. And so watching Kevin O'Connell, you know, I know he talked to, you know, J.J. McCarthy at halftime. He was like, second half is going to be your time to fly, and we're going to turn things around. And absolutely they did. And it was pretty crazy to watch. I went from getting texts on my phones that are like, Falcons should smoke the Vikings. Hey, man, I'm so glad I bet the Bears, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. And then all of a sudden, like at the end, it was like crickets, like, oh, man, they're not as bad as we originally thought.
Right.
So, you know, hopefully – you know, you can get him uncomfortable early and keep him that way if you're the Falcons heading into next week.
Yeah, I mean, you can still look at his numbers. He's very pedestrian, but they got the win. That's all that matters. And, you know, they used him in the running game to score that one touchdown. The zone read type play. And Caleb Williams looked so much better in that first half for the most part. But, you know, it doesn't finish. I don't know. I don't know. It's crazy because these are two first-round picks from last year going at it, and then when we play Sunday night, it'll be two first-round picks from last year going at it, you know, with McCarthy and Penix. So it's kind of crazy at how many quarterbacks are out there right now starting from last year's draft. And then you look at the one this year, and there was nothing, right? I mean, it's hardly anything. It's just Cam Ward. And, you know, that's pretty much it. So their defense is still good. They were able to get Caleb Williams on the ground a couple of times. And Jordan Mason, who got traded there, is kind of taken over as the leading rusher. So, look, there's a lot for the Falcons to look at. I do feel good, though, about what I think Ulbrich did. Like, I think what if you look at what we did defensively and how we sent – when we sent blitzes and everything, J.J. McCarthy, I don't feel like will pick up on them the way Baker did.
Yeah.
And that – like, Baker – I've been saying that J.J.'s not – I think he's probably more mobile than Baker – with all due respect, a little bit was that's really more of his game. But that said, Baker Mayfield is a pretty smart dude. He knows what he's seeing back there.
So basically, last night, you know, watching the game, it's kind of like a data dump for Raheem Morris. What does he and Falcons Co. do today now with all the information they have gathered last night, what they saw last night, what happens today?
What did you say, a data dump? What is that?
A data dump. Like, they got a lot of data.
Oh.
They got
oh,
to
I thought
see.
You said a day two.
Yeah, that's
dump.
What I thought.
Oh,
I thought
no, no, no.
Like, it's a data dump. Dump. It's a data dump. I'm like, whoa.
That's like a Donnie Kroger type incident.
I knew what you were saying, Allie.
Thank you. Today, I mean,
I'm glad Bo was confused too. I was like, yeah, a data dump. Let me think.
Well, they just inherited a lot of information.
Completely understand what you
are
mean
they
now.
Dumping?
Yeah, it's and look, this JJ McCarthy's first start. There's going to be ups and downs, obviously, but he's got a lot of pieces around him to make him successful, and that's exactly what happened yesterday. I thought both these teams extremely underwhelming as far as third downs go, and I think that should excite Falcons fans looking at last night. If you're kind of lining yourself up with the Minnesota Vikings, I think both teams were 25%, which is not good. And, you know, the Falcons were at 40% this past weekend, which is not great. You know, Tampa was at 50, but 25% ain't going to get it done in the NFL, and that a lot of that has to do with quarterback play and being pressured and things like that, recognizing what you're looking at. So I think Raheem Morris, you dive into it, you break it down, you see what kind of, you know, what they want to be and what schematically they were trying to do to get there, and you try to you know, put together a game plan to approach that the best way possible.
Yeah, both teams were 25% on third down, and but both these teams ran the ball for around 120 yards. However, I'm not taking away from that stat. That's not what I'm meaning, but the fact that Caleb Williams was the leading rusher, I don't know how I would feel about that. If I, in one hand, I like it because he was able to keep plays alive, showed his off-schedule, you know, type. He's always been a player that really played better off-schedule.
Yeah.
And one of the things you want to get him better at was playing on schedule. He did at times. But I just love the fact that I ran DeAndre Swift 17 times and only accumulated 53 yards.
Yeah, I would say this. If I had that line for Bijan this past weekend, I'd feel good about it.
Well,
you know what I mean? Like, I'd feel pretty good if Bijan's line was 17 for 53. And there was a couple of explosives tacked on to a couple of, like, tackles for loss. You know what I mean? It was like either feast or famine when it came to the run game for Chicago last night. I had my eyes on Drew Dalman the whole time. Shocker. I'm like, I want to watch Drew Dalman play.
How'd you
think? It was okay. You know, it was growing to expect when he was here. Honestly, contrasting that to what I saw from Ryan Newsel this morning, which we're going to get into at 7 o'clock, we miss him a lot more. Mm-hmm. I will say that much. Not good for Ryan Newsel. So watching Drew Dalman kind of play and get those reps in, I thought he played pretty well. But, you know, on the whole, they've got a lot to fix in Chicago. And they have a lot to fix in Minnesota, too. Don't get me wrong, but they got a lot to fix in Chicago. That's not just going to be a small turnaround for them. They've got to get it done with Caleb Williams at quarterback.
Well, and two guys that we've been waiting to hear updates on regarding the Falcons are Darnell Mooney and Drake London after he went out in Sunday's game. And Raheem seems pretty positive about both.
I won't be able to confirm anything until Wednesday for those guys on what's happening as far as practice and how they're going to go. But Drake is a tough human. I feel good about it after talking to him. I just want to, you know, get some clarity and all that type of stuff before I enter the lead because he's going to hold it to me. Feel good about Mooney. We'll see more. He did warm up. He's been doing a lot of things that you guys have seen. So, like, that's just when I get a chance to sit down with all the guys and discuss it, our performance team, that happens tomorrow, and see where we're at there. We definitely got to do it tomorrow so we can get our planning going. So we'll see. I'll have more clarity tomorrow on that.
I'm curious to get Bo's take on this about how much better you feel going into this week if Drake London and Darnell Mooney are part of the game plan, because I feel immensely better, copious amounts of better, right, if you will, if both those guys are a part of this. And Drake is obviously the heartbeat of this offense. Darnell significantly changes the way you're able to approach the passing game.
I think Darnell just draws attention as far as that vertical passing game. I mean, he really put stress on a defense going downfield, and I didn't feel like you had that last week. Everyone's harking on this, the play with Hodge where he was interfered with at the end of the game, and you know, some people are ignorant in their statements that he quit on the route, which is just a lack of understanding of either watch, you know, what you see, or just not watching the game at all. Maybe had one too many drinks, I don't know, but he was knocked off his spot. Darnell Mooney immediately puts pressure on the defense, and I think it also helps Drake London as well. I personally think both are going to play. You know, from what Ross said about Drake, I know that he left the game, and he was in the locker room at the end of the game. I don't know if most people know that, which means he was getting checked out. That said, if Ross says that with optimism,
he's
right there
human,
about Drake, I think that makes me feel good. I always thought, remember last week I told you I didn't think Darnell would play week one, but I actually had high hopes for him playing week two, and nothing's changed for me.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it. Look, we need – Mackel needs his full arsenal, right?
Yeah.
I mean
– No doubt about it.
Yeah, I think everyone feels better if you have a full repertoire out there.
Yeah, and look, when I saw Drake on the sideline, and it's the classic. Anybody that's ever had one of these issues, when they start reaching under the shoulder pad and pressing with their finger, mm-hmm. and they're trying – what he's trying to do, he's trying to find – the trainer in that aspect is trying to find the end of your collarbone where it meets your shoulder, and he's trying to poke at that AC joint. And, that's where shoulder separations happen. It's where AC sprains are going on. And you can just see anytime a trainer reaches up under that little first shoulder pad, he's, like, kind of poking around. And finally, you'll see, like, somebody grimace. Right when he gets to the AC joint, it's like, oh, there it is. And it's just one of those things that happens when somebody falls on their shoulder and the shoulder separation thing, like I said, it's just one of those things that you deal with. And I'm with Raheem, though. Drake's one of the toughest dudes we have on this team. There's no doubt about it. I will say as well, and just to tack this on top, they asked him to do a lot of really tough run blocking in this game. And it's because he's good at it. But when you're asking Drake to come in and block defensive ends, I don't know how they change that in terms of how they approach that this weekend. They're going to have to make some changes to what they're asking of him in terms of physicality as they approach the run game against Minnesota.
Well, hopefully we do get those updates from Raheem, that Darnell and Drake will be playing. Coming up next, Tennessee will not be whole when they meet up with Georgia this weekend. Got a few starters on the IL. We'll get into it. And we've got my Allie Mack drop. And a reporter was using a burner account to defend her husband.
Yes.
We'll get into it next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Yeah.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, we are the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game with Allie Mack, Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan, and Dylan behind the glass. Now, Tennessee will again be without its two starting corners when they face Georgia this week. Jermaud McCoy is still recovering from his ACL tear in January, and Ricky Gibson also suffered a left arm injury when they played Syracuse and will be out for an extended period of time.
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to go with Colton Hood, who's a Colorado transfer. He did start last week, four combined tackles, a fumble recovery touchdown through two games, and Ty Redman, a true freshman. They also have, remember Boo Carter is kind of back there. Remember Boo Carter was the one that I guess like was missing spring practice or something, and his teammates had to call him out. It's a debacle when it comes at Tennessee secondary. They're going to be up against it facing this UGA wide receiver corps this weekend.
Is this a bad joke? I remember Boo Radley. Do you know who Boo Radley is?
I do.
That's lame joke.
The answer to your first question was yes. It's a bad joke.
We don't need literary references.
Yeah, no thanks.
Hopefully.
I had a buddy of mine just named his kid Holden, speaking of which.
Really?
Is his middle name Caulfield?
No, it should be, though.
Stout? You know what? Hold on. Now you've went there. That used to be my favorite book. I read it when I was 18. The
To Kill
Catcher
a
in her eye. Holden Caulfield.
Oh, gotcha.
And then I reread it when I was like, when 790 exiled all of us, and I was like, oh, I have nothing to do this summer. I'll reread this. And I then hated the character.
Different perspective.
I completely, from like 18, like the 12-year difference, or 13, 14 year, however it was, I absolutely despise the Holden Caulfield character now. But anyways, look, maybe these two guys being out will give Gunnar Stockton a chance to push the ball downfield, because there wasn't a ton of that against Austin Peay. And so, you know, a lot of shorter stuff. It's a good sign for Georgia. They are a 3.5-point favorite going to Knoxville, which basically means that Vegas thinks Georgia's a 7-point better team overall than Tennessee.
Yeah, it's interesting to kind of see how that all plays out, too. I mean, I had a lot of questions about Tennessee going in this year. I think everybody did. You know, we've got James Pierce playing here, and Dylan Sampson's in Cleveland, and, you know, Nico Yamaliava's out of UCLA. It's like,
that's not working out very well for him right now.
Yeah, what's going on with this team? And so they've already answered some questions. We're going to find out a lot more about it. But, man.
Also, you just wanted to say Nico's name, didn't you?
Nico Yamaliava.
It's kind of a brag for you because you can say it and I can't.
I don't need to say it. So I'm going to stop saying that.
Good. Well, you might not sit very much the way he's playing at UCLA.
No, there's no doubt.
We don't need to talk about him.
Well, we did talk yesterday about how Bill Belichick says the Patriots are not welcome at UNC, and that all stems from him saying the Patriots wouldn't let him in their facility. Mike Vrabel has a different take on this. Basically, he's saying he doesn't know where that's coming from. He's taking the high road, saying that Bill is, of course, welcome at the Patriots facility.
Yeah, this whole thing is just insane to me.
Petty.
I mean, can you imagine? All right, let's just let me try to put it in my perspective here. Let's just say Nick Saban loses his mind in the next couple of years, right? Starts dating a 25-year-old, moves, you know, decides he's going to coach some other team, like, I don't know, UCF or something.
Okay.
And then I all of a sudden take over to Alabama, and he's saying that Bama people are not welcome wherever he's at. Like, think about how crazy that is for Mike Vrabel. He's like, dude, what are we doing here?
Right.
Like, Mike Vrabel is literally in the Ring of Honor, or whatever they call it, for the New England Patriots, and played under Bill Belichick. And all this back and forth and the craziness of a guy we all used to hold in such high regard is just kind of fallen by the wayside, and he has to clean up stories like this. Just, it's insane to think about. 10 years ago, me is like, what is going on?
Right.
Well, I mean, when you date Regina George, this is kind of how you act, right? And that's what Bill Belichick said. I'm just going to keep the references going, the bad movie references going, bad book. But seriously, like, hey, he's dating Regina George, and he's acting like one of her cronies, right? So, you know,
the plastics.
He's acting like Gretchen Wieners. I mean, that's all this is. So I'm so tired of hearing about a football coach that is in college football, that is a 500 right now and got blown out, and the only time he's actually played a team with a pulse. So, you know.
It does feel like this will be the last straw. Like, for, you know, the Bill Belichick conversation, it's headed by the way.
It's dying a slow death.
Yeah, it is.
I do like the Regina George comparison. Arch Manning.
Thank you, Allie. I appreciate that.
Arch Manning is not injured, and Steve Sarkisian had an interesting way of saying so.
Arch Manning seemed to be having some throwing pains by the
according
fourth
to
quarter.
Who? Arch said that to you?
No.
Oh, according to who?
It just looked like he was...
He doesn't have any.
Is there an explanation to why it looked like that?
I don't know. I've never filmed any of you guys when you're using the bathroom, so I don't know what faces you make when you're doing that.
I don't know where Sark is going. Doing? I know what he means, though. I mean, what he's saying is like, can I just say it? Dylan, if you think anything goes over the line, hit the dump button. But essentially what he's saying is, look, man, just because you make a strained face doesn't mean you're constipated, right? Because sometimes you just got to push to get it out. And why when he winces, when he throws, doesn't mean he's hurt. I mean, that's all he's saying. But why in the hell would you go
there?
Did
you see the video, though?
Yes.
Like the slow-mo?
I did.
He looks hurt. Let's be real.
I'm not.
He looks hurt.
He did look hurt when I watched it.
And
it doesn't help it that the ball was awful. Awful throw.
I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. I'm just trying to tell you why he made that. Why I think he made that reference.
Sure.
I'm not defending it. Yeah. It's a dumb reference. It sounds like a guy who didn't know what to say, and he was like, "Well, you know, I strain when I poop, so I'm constipated."
See, here's the reason why I did not like it, because it seemed like he went above and beyond to try to make this writer look stupid, and it was like, dude, we all saw it. We're not dumb. Everybody saw what happened.
All he did was draw more attention to it.
Yeah,
that's all he did.
I agree, and I'm a Sark fan. Look, he's been with the Falcons, been at Bama, has had success both places. Dude, you can't – come on. Like, what are we doing here? Like, you tried to, like, talk down to this guy, and he was like, no, Arch didn't tell me. And we got a commode reference.
Well, and how does Arch feel about all this?
Right.
He's like, come on, dude. Michigan's head coach Sherrone Moore will be serving a 2-game suspension that comes from the NCAA's ruling on the school's advanced scouting case. In the meantime, Biff Poggi will serve as Michigan's interim head coach.
Yeah, now that he got past the Oklahoma game, which is his alma mater, let's go ahead and that whole thing. And we talked about this when this was handed down. Absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. What is the point of a suspension if you can pick the ones you're suspended for? So, I don't know, man. That's another one with Bill Belichick. I'm tired of talking about the Michigan suspensions. It is what it is. Like, they're not good right now. Sherrone Moore is going to be up against it if he doesn't win a ton more football games this year.
Did you see Bryce Underwood going at it, going after with one of his teammates?
Not like,
hey man, we got to be better. Like basically dogging him out on the sideline, and that got sideways quickly.
That's not a good look.
Yeah,
not a good look.
Well, you know why?
True freshman is. Oh.
But can I ask you a legitimate question? Like, because I think you can. You're the only, and I know we got to get to your backdrop because it sounds really good, Allie. You're the only person that can answer this. I think in this room, if you go back and you're with Greg McElroy, whoever, and that guy's making $10 million and you're sitting there making hardly anything and he's dogging you out and you have the same amount of – maybe you have more experience there and you've been doing it. Like, wouldn't that add to the –
You can answer your own question here. I'm going to have a hard time not punching him right in his face, knowing he's making $10 million and not playing well at that.
Yeah. And then yeah,
and then you start blaming it on everybody else. Yeah, no, I'm good on that.
And he's a leadership role.
You're going to get your nose busted at some point.
All right. Well, Sports Talk on the Game is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's $250 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. You know, with all the NFL chaos that was week one and everything we've been excited about, I think this story kind of fell through the cracks last week, so I wanted to make sure we talked about it. Because sometimes we do silly things for the ones we love. We all know Laura Rutledge, ESPN and SEC Network reporter.
Not going to act like I don't love her.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
We all know and love her.
We all love her, right? We all love her.
Oh, okay. All right,
do you not love her?
Oh, I love Laura Rutledge. Okay. I just wasn't as quick to proclaim it as some people in here.
Like I said, let's not act like we don't all love Laura Rutledge. She's great. We love her.
So when her husband, Josh Rutledge, was playing in Major League Baseball, Laura didn't like it when people said mean things about her husband. And so she went the burner account route.
When he was with the Angels, I made a fake Twitter, which I'm admitting this, okay? I know this was wrong. I'm not doing it ever since, but this was a one-time thing. And the name was like Billy Halo 76 or something. And Billy Halo only tweeted positive things about Josh Rutledge. And then like the occasional Mike Trout tweet, because I was like, shoot, someone's going to figure this out, you know? So if anyone had said anything negative about him, I would find them. And then Billy Halo would be like, you're wrong, blah, 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 you know, and back it up with stats or whatever. I don't think Josh knows this. If he watches this, he's going to be really mad at me.
I love the fact that she's like, if anyone tweets anything negative, I will find you.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
She sounds like a stalker.
I went to college with Josh.
Did you?
Yeah, I went to college with Josh. He was at Bama when I was there.
Really?
Good dude, yeah. We hung out, I mean, a couple of times. We weren't really friends, but yeah, I went to college with him. And they were dating at the time, I want to say. I think they're both from Orlando or something like that.
So if you know him, then how do you think he knows by now, but how do you think he's reacted to finding out?
He's embarrassed.
Yeah.
He's definitely embarrassed. And like, it's one of those things that if you had found out in real time, you'd be like, are you serious?
Right.
Now looking back on it, and he's been out of baseball for a few years, you're like, dude, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
But she's such a bigger name than him that it's almost like he's like, this is your problem now. Yeah. Like, I don't have to worry about this.
I and you know him because you they were there, y'all were there at the same time. I would probably be like, stop. But that's kind of cool that you did that.
Right.
I have you done it, or has either one of your has Lindsay ever defended you? Tried to defend you on social media? Because I like early in my career when I was still at the other station. And I was just a producer. I would go out with people on Twitter, and Amy would like start to jump in. I'd be like, whoa,
you gotta
get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
I was like, let me tell you something. I handle me on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't need you getting involved because now it changes the situation. Like, right? Because I'm not gonna let you talk to my girl that way. Like, now everything. Now things get completely different.
Yeah,
you can talk about me how you want.
I don't know. That would definitely be something that Lindsay would do, but I don't know if she ever has.
We're in a weird situation because I've been in radio for a long time, so I'm used to the comments, but I have a feel like I haven't gotten many yet as far as 92.9 The Game, but if a negative comment comes in, I have a feeling my husband might have a hard time not saying something or responding with something witty, and I cannot read his Twitter threads because I'm just like, I want to go after that person.
Yeah, he's got like, what does he have, 100,000 Twitter followers?
And Braves fans are unhinged.
Yeah,
so
Braves
like,
Twitter might be the worst.
Twitter's
of all.
Unhinged. Twitter just itself is unhinged. Let's just be real.
It's a cesspool.
You have 240 characters to make yourself sound like the smartest person in the world. That's what everybody's tasked with on Twitter.
Exactly.
Well, the funny thing is very few actually accomplish that.
I would say nobody ever does.
Well, coming up, now that the emotions have settled some, let's talk about the good, bad, and the ugly, because Mike and Bo have been reviewing the film from Sunday's game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We'll talk about those Falcons next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.